This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Varis. Varis offers premium quality cases for all kinds of smartphones, including the new Samsung Galaxy S6 and Galaxy S6 Edge. Varis has cases that can store your credit cards and business cards and even cash. They offer protection without compromising the style and design of your phone, and they combine a number of your life's necessities into your phone's case. Just go to amazon.com/Varis, V-E-R-U-S, and use coupon code AndroidC, and that's in all capital letters, at checkout to save 50% and get free shipping. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 231 for Friday, April 10th, 2015. Welcome to the show. I gotta move this mic away. That was freaking me out a little bit. It is a big, crazy day. If it's your first time joining us, hi, I'm Phil. I run Android Central, sort of. And we do this every week. We do it live, actually. And we record it. And all sorts of stuff. So you can watch it like 16 different ways whenever the hell you want. It's been that kind of day. Jerry Hildenbrand is here with us.
Hi. I just ride in this clown car. He drives it.
You're the guy pedaling. You got your feet sticking out the floorboards.
That's who I want to be, with a big pointy hat.
Kick it as hard as you can. You're Fred Flintstone. Or are you Barney or are you Fred?
I think Fred was the one who drove most.
I'm Schlep Rock, baby.
Half the people are out there like, what are you talking about?
Kids of a certain age do not know who the Flintstones are, which is
really I don't know that my kids do, come to think of it.
No, I know mine don't.
Wow.
I think anybody younger than me probably missed out on that.
We're going to have to do something about that this weekend. So, Andrew Martinick, everybody.
Yep, reminiscing about the Flintstones here.
Are you old enough for that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That was weekend cartoons for sure. And the Flintstones, you know, were a big deal.
What about you, Russell?
I definitely would watch the Flintstones and Ninja Turtles. But I don't think there's time to catch my kids up this weekend. I think I'm too busy with Star Wars stuff because none of them have seen any of the Star Wars movies. So this
Let's just...
Whoa, stop. Russell has to go let his kids watch Star Wars right now.
Now we got all weekend, man. We're good. I have a plan.
Are they going to say that you look more like Obi-Wan Kenobi with the beard or me?
Oh, they're totally going to say that you look it.
Maybe I'm like balding you and McGregor. I guess. Even the Force can't do anything about that. Sorry. I love how the rest of you are just polite and don't say anything. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked. Actually, I was playing it, for those of you watching the video, I was just playing it behind me a few minutes ago. Where'd it go? Whatever. Star Wars on Google Play. I'm excited. There it is. I can't, like, if I actually play it, is Google going to freak out? YouTube? I'm not going to do it.
I can just picture George Lucas beating down your door.
Gonna knock on my door right now.
Busted.
You gave him $100 to watch it. You know, he should just let you be.
So that's the big question. Yeah, I mean, to back up, Star Wars is on Google Play, it's on Amazon, it's on iTunes, where else? Not Hulu. Vudu? Is that a thing?
Vudu, yep.
Yeah. Vudu's a thing, yeah.
So, I mean, finally, digitally, that was the big thing, right? If I wanted to watch Star Wars at home, I had to go find a DVD or maybe a Blu-ray. I don't remember if I bought it again.
Hopefully a Blu-ray.
I don't remember if I bought it again on Blu-ray. But, I mean, when my wife and I first moved in together, she had them all on VHS. And I'm like, no. I mean, she had a horrible TV. She only had VHS. She didn't even own a computer when we moved in.
But she has so many redeeming qualities, Phil.
Yes. Oh, many, many other reasons why I am extremely happy to have married her, let alone, you know, get to stand in the same room. But her technological feats were not one of them. And so, I think we've bought it at least two other times now. What are you guys up to? How many times have you bought Star Wars?
I have VHS, Blu-ray, and Google Play, so three.
I have VHS. I was not going to buy it on Blu-ray because it wasn't going to be available in digital, and I thought for sure the digital was going to come right behind it, and so I was only going to have to wait a little while, and it wasn't going to be a big deal, and I think that was like 10 years ago.
And I'm sure I bet the parents have DVDs. I have not watched it. I have not watched any Star Wars movie in years. So it might be a good time to refresh my memory here with a with a Google Play download. That's the only way I'm going to keep track of it, because otherwise it's just going to end up in a box somewhere.
I bought a Blu-ray player last year, and I don't think I bought Star Wars again. Just because, I mean, we even bought a lot of Blu-ray stuff just on principle, because I'd rather have it digitally.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have stuff that I know my wife has bought in the past year that I just bought again on Google Play because I wanted to. Yeah. No, we're going to watch it again this weekend, too. Definitely.
I think Google Play is the only one that actually has the bundle where it's cheaper if you get them all together.
$89.
A couple people were complaining about it being more expensive on iTunes if you bought them all together.
Hmm.
Which I thought was weird. I'm curious.
More expensive? It's not just the same price as buying individually. It's more expensive?
Well, yeah, no. So, like, you buy them individually, it's $20 a pop. But if you buy them all together on Google Play, then it's $90.
Right.
But I haven't seen that deal anywhere else. It's only Google Play where I've seen the actual discounted bundle.
Right. I have to admit, when I found out that I could get streaming digital copies of all the Star Wars movies, I didn't even look at the price. I just clicked.
I looked at the price.
I'm glad it wasn't like $199 or something, because I just clicked.
I looked at the price, but I didn't hesitate much. I mean, look.
At that point, I don't think many people are. Not when it comes in at $90.
Right. If you're a fan, it's worth $90.
My kids have been, well, my youngest kid, my youngest daughter is 4, and she's been watching Frozen nonstop, and I bought it again on Google Play just for the convenience of it. You know, screw DVDs. It's 2015.
Your daughter again.
Well, and especially with the Disney stuff, because it comes out on Google Play before it comes out in the physical stores. I've been buying most of the kids' stuff digitally because it's out before the DVDs are available in stores. And you get more stuff that the kids, like my kids, like to thumb through the bonus features and stuff. And I think it's weird that Disney isn't doing bonus feature stuff for some of these digital films. We're seeing a couple of producers do it, but Disney's not one of them. But the digital version comes out like 2 or 3 weeks beforehand now, so there's no point in hedging on it.
It's so crazy for so many things work well. Like I never thought Disney would work well like that, but they're doing it right.
Oh yeah, yeah. Their app is really cool for centralizing everything.
Yeah, and not to go down that road again, but like music is still such a crapshoot. I finally did my one-time reset of Google Play devices this week, and I don't. You know, honestly, I don't want to hear the "it's only a tech reviewer problem." It's really not. You know, it says unlimited. It's not unlimited. You're treating me like a criminal, and I just want to be able to use the service I'm paying for. That's all I ask. But it's nice to see. The point is, it's nice to see these movies work the way that I think it should work, and I think everybody probably thinks it should work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Never thought that day would come.
Exactly. I don't mind that I paid 3 different times for Star Wars bundles on different media. That was my choice. But if I had to pay more than once on digital media because I wanted to watch it more than one place, I would balk.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good, especially if you wanted all 6 of them.
Well, you're already starting. We're getting into this weird zone now that they have Music Key on YouTube tied in with Google Play Music, where you start watching an approved Music Key music video, and Google Play Music playback will stop working because you're not allowed to stream in 2 places at once, even though the content is kind of different and you're watching on different devices. I hope that doesn't leak over into the Play Movies YouTube layout as well.
I wish I could opt out of that.
I don't even touch that. So I wish that wouldn't stop my Google Play Music if I play a YouTube video that's part of the package.
It worries me, actually, quite a bit. And there's, I mean, what's the alternative? I know what Jerry's option is.
It's not a good one, but that's what it is.
We need to do something. But yeah, because Google Play Music is so good. Like, in and of itself as a service, it works so well. It does exactly what I want, except for that one thing.
And the interface is good, and the app apps are good and everything. So if it weren't for this issue with deauthorizations, I would have no other problem with it. And I look at the other services, and the apps aren't as good, and it's just not quite the way I want to use it. But you have to, you have to potentially go with a worse experience just so you can use it on multiple devices the way you want. It seems kind of crazy.
I just hope that there's somebody in Mountain View it's doing everything they can to change that. You know, maybe they can't. I'm going to guess that they can't. I think that this is the octopus of the music industry squeezing everything. But I hope they can do something.
Give me the option to pay more.
I don't want to. Sure. I want to get Chris Yerga and shake him down, figure out what's going on. I want answers. Should have him on the podcast and like be super nice about it. Dude. Flip the spotlight.
Oh, with duct tape over his mouth, strapped to the chair.
Let's talk, Chris.
What service would you use if you couldn't use Google Play Music? Jerry.
I settled on Amazon because I can't upload my own music to the player. I have a lot of music that I'm not going to be able to buy because I've been listening to it for 30 years. And that's what worked for me. It's not the best. I think Spotify is maybe better if you solely just want to stream. I like the interface better and it seems to work better. But Amazon is the one that lets me upload my own.
I don't think I disagree. I like buying albums and listening to whole albums. And that's why none of the others have really done it for me. It'll be interesting to see over the next year or two what else happens, because I'm way into Android Auto right now, and what else properly integrates with that. And Pandora obviously is been working in infotainment in other ways, but.
I just have a picture of your list of authorized devices, and it says Android Auto, Android Auto, Android
Auto. Well, I mean, that's the nice thing about that, right? It's based off the device and not. So that's not something we have to worry about. You want to hear? I got two weird music stories from this week. You want to hear them?
Yes.
So Wednesday night, I went to a work thing for my wife. Her big boss is a big fan of some 70s band called Firefall, which I didn't really remember, but they have like two songs. I mean, yeah, Jerry might remember. So anyway, I'm sitting there, and I had the GS6 with me, and it's like, it's in an old theater here, and the audience is all dark and the stage is lit, and that's never easy to shoot in any circumstances, right? Because you know, it took me forever to learn how to do it badly with a real camera when we're doing live blogs and stuff, but. Go on G Plus and look at the picture that I put up there, and damn, that camera. Really good stuff. And then the other weird one today was I was going to get a hot dog, and I ended up behind the tour manager for Coal Chamber, for you metalheads out there.
Nice.
Well, for you new metalheads, who's like ordering a whole bunch of crap for the whole band, and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh, okay, we're fine. and then saw the drummer and guitar player walking down the street. So anyway, those are Phil's weird music stories for the week. Cheers.
Should have given him a hard time about it. I've been like, man, you stuck up the line for a while. The least you could do is get me some autographs.
All right. I listened to them back in the 90s when they first came out. Believe it or not, Jerry didn't believe me.
I believed you. I smile inside every time I think of Metalhead Phil.
He's still here. My kids. What is it? I mean, speaking of music, God, my 4-year-old's been requesting Nine Inch Nails. How weird is that? She loves Copy Eva, you know, the new stuff. And I said, why do you like it? She says, because it goes boom, tsh, boom, tsh, boom, tsh. Cracks me up, the stuff our kids like. I don't know. Speaking of the Android Auto front, I ran into a weird thing yesterday that I just figured out. I was trying to call my wife, and I kept hitting it on the display, and nothing would happen. And I finally figured it out, because the phone is turned off, right? And I was using the M9. Because the GS6 still doesn't work with Android Auto, by the way. So I had the M9 plugged in, and it's a relatively fresh install, right? Like, I just got it Tuesday. So when you first install a phone, there's just all those little things that happen, right? And so I'm trying to call my wife, and I'm hitting the button, nothing's happening. And I finally realized what it is. So when you plug in Android Auto, your phone goes dark, really, right? It just shuts off like it normally would. But then when you turn it on, it's still locked, and you finally has this Android Auto screen, and so it's this weird, you know, daydream hybrid thing, whatever. It was asking me that whole time if I wanted to use the phone to call her or if I wanted to use Skype. It didn't have the default set.
Oh, because Skype is preloaded.
But you couldn't see it for the longest time. And I don't even remember, I should look, I don't think I'm even logged in on Skype there.
No, it'll still show up. I remember that on the S6 is also has Skype installed. Even if you've never launched Skype anything, the first time you go to make a phone call, it'll say, hey, would you like to use Skype to make this phone call?
No.
Just reminding you that we have Skype installed in this phone. What do you think about Skype?
No, let's rephrase that. Hey, would you like to use this app that you didn't install that's bloatware, the blah, blah, right. blah. I mean, yeah, I'm not even signed in on it.
So you've never opened or installed or... you know, care about whether or not it makes phone calls.
Yes, only we had a store filled with apps, you could download them instead of having to have them pre-installed on our phone.
Hey, Samsung can give you two of those.
And I get that this is kind of an edge case because it's not like that many people have Android Auto, so I'm not
worried about it. But this is still a thing when you go to make a phone call even without Android Auto,
yep.
because now you have a person that says, I just want to make a damn phone call, and it's giving me two options.
You would have that same issue if somebody had your M9 in that same state. They haven't made a phone call yet, sitting in the cup holder in their car trying to use Bluetooth.
I don't have a good answer for it, but that whole default app picker thing just is not a good experience for anyone. Like you and I, we can live with it. We figured it out.
It works a little different across phones, too.
Mm-hmm.
The way that HTC does it is it'll pop up the app and you can select it. And then ask you the next time if you want to do it always, which is kind of interesting. So you kind of get this double opt-in
situation.
S6, you just choose right from the start, just once or always.
Speaking of HTC,
the real question is, do you want to use Photos or Gallery?
Oh, yes. Or which browser do I want to use? And in fact, GS6 is kicking me into their browser a lot, and I don't have the option to use Chrome on a lot of stuff that I want to.
Yeah, and you can't disable the built-in browser on the S6 either,
which
you could on the old one. So even if you set Chrome as default, there's still some hooks that just go straight to the browser, which their browser's okay, but it doesn't sync to Google the way Chrome does.
Right, I mean, it's kind of not the point.
Yep.
Speaking of HTC, there's some stuff I want us to talk about real quick. But let's take a quick break first, and when we come back, I'm going to get real mad. It's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. I'm just warning you. Be right back. Okay, it's time to talk about two of my favorite subjects, getting things delivered and laying around in bed. And with Casper mattresses, you can do both of those things. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. It's been revolutionizing the industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms, and instead passing on that savings directly to you, the customer. A mattress can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper costs between $500 for a twin size to just $950 for a king size mattress. And if you're worried about buying a mattress online, I get you. But buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery, and the new hybrid latex and memory foam mattresses roll neatly into a large cardboard box, believe it or not. And unfurling it actually is half the fun. You have to see it. And for some reason, if you just don't like it, return it within 100 days. That's more than 3 months to actually try out the mattress. And you can't do that in a showroom. I've tried, and I'm not allowed back. So what do you get with Casper? It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's got just the right sink and the right bounce thanks to the latex foam and memory foam combination. And they really come together for better nights and brighter days. You get a risk-free trial and return policy, sleep in it for 100 days, and with free delivery and painless returns. Plus, the mattresses are made in America, start at $500 for a twin size, and what's more, it feels good. It really does hit that sweet spot between too soft and too firm. I've tried it. You have to... And it really does hit that sweet spot between too soft and too firm. You've got to try it to believe it, and I have. It feels that good. So get $50 toward the purchase of any mattress today by visiting casper.com/AC. Be sure to use the promo code AC at checkout. I had a hard time during the commercial breaks last week trying to decide if I wanted to leave in all you guys giving me a hard time as like an outtake or not. In the end, I just cut it. So HTC and the M9. Hey, by the way, it is also available now in stores. I mean, it's a pretty big deal when you have two major flagship phones like this in store on the same day. Like, that's awesome for Android. That is a really good thing, I think. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think it's not so awesome for the carriers.
How so?
They don't know how much to buy of each phone. They certainly don't want hundreds of one model sitting on the shelf. But, it's just, you're right, it's very odd, and usually manufacturers do everything they can to keep it from happening.
People are saying I have a lot of echo on my mic. I heard that too, and I don't know why.
I was actually in a Verizon store earlier today, and the folks that I talked to said that they were the Essex was just flying out of the store, but the M9 they didn't have nearly as many people interested in it until they, like, because the way that their store was set up, they're sitting side by side, so they didn't really know about the phone until they went and touched it. But a couple people went and touched it and wound up going with that one today instead. It was kind of an interesting conversation I had with a couple of people in my local Verizon store.
You know, T-Mobile had that weird kind of PR push today where they said that their pre-sales of the S6 were twice that of the S5. And that's kind of interesting because T-Mobile was the first one, you know, they kind of jumped the gun and offered pre-sales, you know, a week ahead of the others where you couldn't even pre-order. You could just, you know, put your name on a list kind of thing. So I'm not sure how much you can derive from that when you don't have real numbers. But it's interesting that T-Mobile actually wanted to come out and say, hey, look at this. We sold twice as many as we did in the same period with the S5. It's just not sure what they have to gain from that. When they're carrying the M9 as well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the marketing, I think, just like always. And Samsung has a lot of money to spend on it. Even if it spends, you know, half as much as it spent last year, it's still going to be a lot of money.
And we always bring that up, but we never mention they spend that money very well, too. It works.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. It can, you know, it gets a little annoying to us just because we have to live and breathe this stuff. But, you know, that doesn't count. That doesn't matter.
Right. They're not doing it for us. They're doing it so you know, and you funnel your money their way.
So the M9 is out, and yesterday on Thursday night, the story came out that there is a new M9 update available, and it drastically improves the camera.
Tell us, Phil, is there proof that it improves the camera?
Let me get my popcorn, because I've been waiting for this.
Here's how I know that, yes, it improves the camera. It is the same update we saw on the global model right before, like 3 days before our review came out. This update that you're reading about now is for the US versions. Don't even worry about version numbers. People are getting a little too obsessed with the version numbers because
it's also a little more confusing because the version numbers don't follow the same.
They're not linear. It's not, it's not 14,
it's not
15.
5.0.1 and 5.0.2. They don't go in order.
Right. You have one scheme for US, you know, for different regions. It's not just US and Europe or whatever. Alex had a good comment on the post on it today that explained, you know, the regions, cause he worries about that stuff. So yes, I can absolutely tell you that it changed the way images looked. It's the reason why I didn't take, you know, all the sample pictures in our review, I took literally like the day of the review, the day the review went live, I took them that morning because I spent a couple days with that updated camera and just wanted to get a feel for it. And before that, you know, they didn't look as good. And I tell you, if you really want to see a difference, I'll show you some of the ones I took in Barcelona, you know, 3 weeks earlier. They looked even worse. So, you know, everybody's like, hey, have you seen this update? Is, you know, what does this mean? Is it really going to get better? And, well, yes, if you didn't have that update before, yes, it's going to make a difference. It does not change a thing in our review in the phone. Andrew's got the phone right now. Mm-hmm. Already, you know, that phone has had that update for weeks. So all the pictures I took with it, all, you know, everything I wrote on it does not change. It's exactly as we said it on the 25th or whenever that date was that review, the 29th. No, on the 29th. I don't remember the date, whenever that was. So, yeah, there's a U.S.
You just have to remember that it's not one version of the phone
right.
used all around the world, and other parts of the world have had access to it sooner than the U.S.
I mean, what I really hate is that there were all these U.S. sites that did reviews with the bad software, and that's not their fault.
Right. That was a head-scratcher, why that was allowed to happen.
Absolutely not their fault. You review what you got. And it really goes back to, and I worried a lot about this as we went through MWC, you know, and we used the phone there ahead of time for like 3 days, and the camera wasn't very good. And then we get these review units, and we use them for, you know, the better part of a week, and then get a software update at the last minute, essentially. That improved the processing. It's, I mean, from an inside baseball standpoint, I know people hate when we talk about that, but like, that's just not a very good way, I think, to run a review program. Like, that's just asking for trouble. And that's why I think I wrote about this in the forum some. I don't think there's just this one magic update that fixes things. And that's certainly no way to update imaging, processing software, right? You don't want to do some drastic change. You might do a bunch of little changes. And we saw that with the Nexus 5, right? It took a few incremental updates before it got decent.
And I think it just the problem, I mean, this happens with every phone, every big review cycle. It'll be, you know, a software update hits, halfway through your review time, or, you know, like you said, 2 days before, a day before. I think the problem with HTC here is that it has to do with the camera, and people are just so gun shy about the camera because they want it. They can see the potential. They know that it's possible, and they know, I mean, in Phil's case, you saw what one update could do. So you really want there to be an update that fixes the camera. And so if it says, oh, it improves the camera, then you're just going to jump all over it if you're not thinking critically about it.
I still stand by exactly what I wrote, and that is you can take some absolutely perfectly good pictures with this camera. You're just not going to take as many as easily as you are with these other cameras that are out there right now. I tell you, even with the bad software in Barcelona, I got a couple that were great. But it's just, look, I mean, I've been using the GS6 all week, and the camera's incredible. It's ridiculously good. I'm going to switch back over to the M9 this weekend and probably for the better part of next week because I need to get a good feel for U.S. battery life. That's like the one big question I had for the M9 was, you know, how's the battery going to handle with LTE here in the U.S. with proper LTE banding?
Alex has been giving us a decent indication in the U.K. now that he has a proper one, which is good.
Right. So I need to find that out, and I'm going to use the camera some more, and I hope it doesn't leave me wanting to cry because Samsung camera is that good. It is really, really good. So we'll see. What else? I tell you, though, it's really tough going from the Samsung display to anything else at this point. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. it makes the M9 display just not look good. And some of that's the temperature and the way that's tuned. It makes it look good.
Yeah, you're seeing a bit of a greenness to yours. Mine doesn't quite have that, but my M9, but it does look washed out a little bit. I compared them when I went and looked through the S6 when you can flip between the different display modes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go to the normal natural display mode on the S6, they're pretty comparable. But then you flip it on to the Vivid or whatever the heck they want to call it this time around, and it's just like a light and day difference. They can really flip the switch on this display.
What were you about to say, Jerry?
I was going to say, and it's not so much that there's anything wrong with the screen on the M9, it's just that Samsung displays are so damn good.
Yeah, and it's apples and oranges a little bit because not just a little bit, but a lot because you're talking two different, you know, display techs. But wow, I mean,
but people don't need to care about what display tech is in their phone; they just care about what it looks like.
Yeah, and that's why I don't really freak out over color accuracy or, you know, AMOLED versus LCD or whatever. Most people are not going to have one side by side, right? You're not going to, you know that one is necessarily better than the other. So I try to tell you, here's how it looks when I'm looking at it right now. That's how I approach it for review. That's not to say there's anything wrong with that. I think it's important to be accurate. I just don't lose as much sleep over it as some people might.
I just want it to look pretty.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, 100% accurate colors or how it matches up against what's true white and true black or something like that isn't important to people. You know, what's more important is, does it look appealing to their eyes when they look at it? You know, when they view it off axis a little bit, how does it look? How bright does it get in sunlight? Does auto brightness properly crank it down when it's, you know, when you're in a dark room? You know, things like that are far more important than just color accuracy to a normal person. I mean, it's pretty much the same argument as when you talk about these cameras. It's, you know, do the cameras take, you know, true to life accurate photos? Well, no, they probably shouldn't actually, because, you know, true to life photos are kind of boring. You know, they want punchier colors, more contrast, usually more brightness, because that's kind of what, you know, that's what you want to see. You want to see, you know, your mind's reproduction of what it looks like, not kind of, you know, the quote unquote reality of the scene.
And you know me, I'm going to process the hell out of them anyway.
Of course.
Well, so, and that's, Andrew brings up a really good point, because in his camera comparison, I noticed that all the pictures from the S6 are a little too much on the green side for the way I like them. But that's just my personal thing. But we, none of us would like them if they were completely accurate based on, you know, a true white balance. If you play with, you know, raw photos and you like to edit them, you know exactly what I mean. If you make something so white is white, your colors very rarely look good. Samsung has found a way to make those colors pop, especially on the screen itself. So, you know, the display tech and the camera tech, they work together there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, for the most part, what are you doing when you take pictures? You take the picture and you turn to the person that you're with and you show it to them on your phone. And or you put it on Instagram and people view it on, you know, there's a good chance a Samsung phone too. And they take pictures that look good on those screens.
Right. And you can't account for everybody's taste, but you can find a spot where everybody thinks it looks good. And that's what they've done, I think.
One place where HTC absolutely still wins is the speaker. Andrew wasn't kidding when he said how just not good the sound. And maybe it's not that it's just that horrible. It's just that I'm used to an M8 speaker.
You just don't get a deep sound from the S6. I mean, it can get quite loud, and you know, if you're listening to a radio, I mean, what I do is I'll listen to a podcast or a
podcast would be,
program or something.
Yeah,
you can crank it up and you can set it on a table and walk around the house and you could still hear it a little bit, but for music or even, you know, background soundtracks and videos or something on YouTube, it just does not sound good at all.
Yeah.
So that, you know, and that's what they did. They didn't give it more room, so all they could do is just make it a little bit louder and crank it up.
Now, I'm all right. The flip side of that is I have heard, I don't have an S6 yet, but it sounds exceptionally well with headphones compared to the S5.
I think it sounds really good with headphones.
So,
I don't know if it, I haven't done any like side-to-side listening to the M9 or other phones, but I mean with my good headphones, it sounds really good.
So it seems like Samsung has spent the time to produce really good sound. But in their opinion, it's more important for rich sounds like you would listen to music with be ported out to the headphones or Bluetooth rather than just a tinny little speaker on the back.
I mean, no matter how good your mobile speaker is, I don't know how much music I'm really going to be listening to on the M9. Not any more than I did on the Moto X or the M8, which have good speakers too. But it is kind of a thing you notice on, you know, if you do watch a YouTube video, having really good sound for those 5 minutes that you're watching is really important, I think. But for Samsung, that would have meant, you know, they don't have room on the bottom for a speaker because they have their buttons there. And up top, they have a lot of stuff going on too. So they would have had to reconstruct the phone pretty significantly to have big speakers on it.
Hey, by the way, speaking of imagery, and I don't know what you guys are using to process, but I still use Snapseed just for whatever reason, but that update this week to it is really nice.
Oh yeah, I got that last night before I even knew it was a thing, and I was playing with it this morning. Really nice job.
Thank God, because that UI needed a lot of work. Thank you whoever did that.
For as much as I process photos from my cameras in Lightroom, I really don't touch them that much on my phone.
I just do a lot of really quick. I usually hit auto. Sometimes I'll HDR up some stuff just to see what it looks like. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes I don't. But most of the time it's just for auto processing, because generally it does what I would want anyway. And then I'll HDR the crap out of something.
Andrew, when you get the Snapseed update, I'll bet that changes.
You think so? Because it's actually a good interface now?
It's a good interface, and it brings the features that you would want to use to the front. They're not hidden anymore, and you know they're there, and they work well.
Right. I mean, because it's always a bit of a frustrating experience if you're trying to, you know, really fine-tune something, and, you know, you're on a 5-inch phone. So it's tough to get that interface right.
So we talked about the HTC update. I hope everybody's got that figured out. If you don't have the update, you'll want it. It does make images better, but this is not some update that makes it significantly better from what we already showed in the review. That's my quick and easy point. I didn't even get mad. See? How about that? Do you want to talk about this Nexus 7, Nexus 5 stuff? Just because we were kind of talking about it this afternoon. More and more threads being created about devices going bad after Lollipop updates.
I looked around and saw them in our own forums, too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's part of the flashing process, because half of these people see the update after they see issues with things getting slower a few days after they flashed it. But I'm not going to rule out that there's not something in the software that those two devices just don't like.
Mm-hmm.
I was willing to rule that out earlier and just say, it's the outliers, X number of devices are going to be bad. But after talking about it, there may be something there, I think.
So really quickly, what we're talking about, because this is the first time it had been brought up to me as a holistic thing, was there are Nexus 7 2013s and Nexus 5s that people are getting the Lollipop update, like from KitKat to Lollipop, and days or weeks later, their phones and tablets just shut off, and they can get them sometimes to start up to a boot screen, sometimes it won't start up at all. In either case, they're unusable from that point forward.
But now I think it's important to know this is different from the bug where the update script won't wipe your user data partition.
Right, that's a boot loop.
Yes, that's a bad bug with the way Google flashes images, and I don't know how they're going to fix it, but they need to.
So what should you do if either of these things happen? I mean, my short answer is RMA the SOB and you know, I mean,
well, my problem with that right now is that if you have a Nexus 7 2013 or a Nexus 5, you're way out of warranty.
Right, and that's a problem.
Unless you bought it a year and a half after it came out, you're way out of anybody giving a damn about you, which
is
really unfortunate.
Right, that means that you're going to be looking at $150, $200 to get it fixed.
And it was even on a 16 gig or even on the 32 gig Nexus 5, it's not worth spending any money to fix it, especially 2 years down the road.
I'm not going to go that far. You're going to get a lot of people upset.
Oh, no. But you bought a $350 phone 2 years ago and you're going to spend $150 to fix it, you're crazy.
Okay. But
that's Andrew.Marnick and Andrew.Central.com.
It's a shame because this is nothing.
I wish that wasn't the case.
If there is some sort of bug in the software that causes some of these devices to crap out, that's a shame. It's not anything the user did, and they're out of warranty, and it's going to cost them money. But I think Phil's right. The first thing you need to do is contact somebody at the company that made it before you plug it into your computer and start wug-freshing and everything else.
Yeah, Phil's advice is sound as far as contact the manufacturer. You may be, a week over your 1 year warranty on your Nexus 5 or something like that if you, bought it late in the cycle, and there may be a chance there. Or it really could be something that's as simple as you get it connected to a computer, you get it to get recognized, and it'll want to boot up after that point. But, I had this issue, well, presumably, obviously the phone is just dead right now. I have this issue on my Nexus 5 where it was charging one night and I go to pick it up the next morning and it won't turn on, and it will not turn on.
You're holding it wrong.
Right. So, and I bought my Nexus 5 the minute it was on sale in Google Play. I'm a year out from anybody giving any kind of warranty service. So, here it goes. It's back in the drawer. It's done for.
I wish I had a better answer than that, but
there is no answer further than that.
If this happens to you, besides contacting Asus or LG, be sure to contact Google too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It may appear that they're not doing anything. If you look at their product forums, you don't see a lot of feedback from Google, but you can bet that they know.
Oh yeah.
They're reading. They know all this, and if you contact Google, if they later decide, all right, this was a fault that's not the user's, let's do something to help, then you've already contacted them and it's already there and you can get the ball rolling and maybe get some help.
Yeah, I mean, worst case, it takes you 15 minutes to have a little online chat with a Google store support, and at least then what happened or what they can and can't do.
So there's that.
Yeah.
No, wait. We don't want to scare everybody. This is a few devices. If you have an Nexus 5 and it's on Lollipop, don't think that it's going to blow up.
There's there's nothing you could do anyway. You know, just keep using your phone. Don't.
Yes.
And when I sound kind of hesitant about all this, that's a little bit why. I saw the headline today. I read says, several of these. Well, okay, how many? Because there's a lot of this stuff.
Millions and millions of these.
Yeah. So when I'm hesitant to do blog posts and to sound the alarm on stuff, really that's why. Just because I do not know how widespread any of this is. So, got to be a little careful about that. What else? Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. One last break. When we come back, I want to do some Q&A. I've been ignoring the Q&A the whole time. Haven't I?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I have.
I mean, break. I wasn't going to say anything.
Break. Go.
Go. If you're in New York or Los Angeles this weekend and are in dire need of what should be a ridiculously good movie, you've got to go check out this one. A24 is presenting Ex Machina, a sci-fi thriller directed by the writer of a couple of my favorite movies, Sunshine and 28 Days Later. Ex Machina is the story of a programmer who wins the opportunity to spend the week with a reclusive CEO of his company, but ends up becoming part of something he never expected, a breathtaking experiment in artificial intelligence. And I'll say no more than that because I really don't want to spoil things. Ex Machina stars Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson, and Alicia Vikander. And again, it opens this weekend in New York and Los Angeles, with more cities and theaters being added every week. Go see it.
10 seconds.
All right, some Q&A. What lives, what lurks in the Q&A? Carl was noticed the Moto discount, Motorola discount, point to a new watch. There's a big discount on the Moto 360. Maybe.
I think it points to the Moto 360 getting a little old.
What do you think, Russell?
I mean, we've heard rumors. It's not impossible. Motorola's obviously got some new thoughts about how to release products recently. So it could be anyone's guess. I would certainly hope so, given that the Moto 360 has been out for a little while and they could use a fresh face.
And I don't think that the current Moto 360 could handle many more software features at this point. That when I use it, the hardware is pretty maxed out for handling what Android Wear currently does. I don't think it can, be considered an up-to-date model for many more features.
I'm still wearing the Zen Watch, by the way.
I've got another Rift Moto, just saying.
Yeah. Ryan wants us to go around in the room and pick a phone. I don't think I'm ready to do that yet. I'm pretty sure you guys aren't either, so...
No, I got the M9 all set up, and I used it all yesterday, and I'm going to use it through the weekend. So,
Tomer asks, your thoughts on the Apple Watch reviews from people who've never used an Android Wear device and saying the Apple Watch is revolutionary. I don't think that's quite true.
I think it's a little reductionist to say that. A lot of people have used Android Wear or are aware of it or have especially used the Pebble if they're an iOS user.
We get a little wrapped up in that you've got people, and just because your job is working for a tech review site, you may carry an iPhone all the time. That's your phone. You bought it from the AT&T store. That's your phone. And you've seen, other smartwatches come and go. Now you've got one that works with your phone and does all this stuff. Let them be excited. That is revolutionary.
I think it looks like a smartwatch to me, and it looks like they're having the same headaches and concerns that we do.
The interface and the software, it looks like a Samsung smartwatch.
I'm glad somebody said that. I'm so glad someone else said that.
I've used all the Samsung smartwatches. I used the Gear S. They did the same exact thing as the Gear S. They tried to put a crap ton of software on a really, really small screen. And there's lots of tapping and scrolling and interaction and really small touch targets and really funky stuff. And the software looks the exact same.
Russell's over there smirking, by the way.
My favorite thing that Phil has said all week long, he's been repeating it all week long. Anytime one of us says something about the Apple Watch, it looks like a smartwatch. And the more I read stuff that people were saying. It really is. It's just, it's got a lot of the same problems we've seen. They're certainly not doing anything new or different here. I think it's going to be interesting to see whether or not people actually go and pick them up.
You know, I have a confession to make.
What's that?
The longer this goes on and the more I wear different Android Wear watches, I think I like Pebble the best. For me,
wrong with that?
For me, Pebble did exactly what I wanted without a whole bunch of extra stuff I don't want going on. And I can't wait to see the new Pebble because I think I'm going to buy one.
I mean, I can definitely agree that Android Wear does things already that I don't care about. I mean, the Moto 360 keeps showing me, heart rate information that I never asked it to collect or I will never keep up with. And it shows me cards that I'm not interested in. And it, you know, does a few different things that I don't want it to do when a lot of times I just want it to show me some notifications. And, you know, that's what the Pebble does.
And I get that I can go in the software and shut all these things down and it won't show me this and it won't show me that. I just hate to think that I bought a device and spent a lot of money on it and then had to go around and disable most of it because it's not really what I wanted. And I had bad luck with my Pebble, but I'm really ready to give them another shot. I want to see their new one bad.
I think after using a bunch of these Samsung watches that do a lot of cool stuff and but get really overwhelming, you know, as soon as I'm at the point where I've tapped on the watch face, tapped or swiped like three times, I'm at the point where I've maxed out the amount of interaction I should be doing on a 1.25-inch screen. And right now, Android Wear doesn't really get beyond that. I mean, you can swipe a few times, tap, and then speak a response or something like that. But once you get beyond that, it's like, take out your 5.5-inch phone and like actually get something done. And that's something I learned on the Samsung watches, you know, a year ago. And they're putting it out there. And I think that I have confidence that people will come to the same general feeling on that on the Apple Watch too.
Carl wants to know, is there a Wear update in the wings? I don't know about in the wings, but...
firmware update?
I'm sure they're... yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're working on stuff.
Right? Oh, yeah. Google's not done.
Yeah.
No.
Brain asks, B-R-A-N-E, by the way. Google released the Android distribution numbers for April, and Lollipop is just 5.4% after 6 months. Do you think Google should take control of the update process? For example, if a manufacturer likes Google Apps, they must support every phone for 2 years.
Well, support every phone and push out quick updates are two different things.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And there's one word missing from that question that you have to talk about, and that is the carriers. You have to do it.
I love that we're saying that 5% of the entire Android sphere it's just 5%. It's only 5% of a billion devices.
That's
and which, the upgrade path over the last month was actually significantly higher than the month before. So it's gaining traction at a rate that's faster than the traction rate for KitKat when you take into account how many more devices there are now than there were at KitKat. But yeah, it's just 5%.
And Russell and I, you know, we already knew this, but it was pushed right in our face at the big Android meet and greet. Most of these phones aren't anything like the phone you just bought from your carrier this year.
Yep.
Most of them are never going to see Lollipop, but people are still using them because they like them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or because they're cheap, or because that's all that's available in that country. I have friends in countries that, you know, the Moto X is you know, a luxury. I'm talking about the first one, not the second one. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just the reality of those markets, you know. So it's when we look at 5% of a billion with a 2% jump over the previous month, that's really not as bad as it sounds. And anyone who tries to make it sound worse is not paying attention.
But it's not easy. It just flat out is not easy to do.
Nope.
And as far as force, if Google is going to force anybody to do anything, they really need to change the way they update phones, and they'll release a beta version of the next version of the operating system in October, and then the next October sends it out to everybody's phone.
Do you think they're going to do another developer preview this year?
It seemed to work out pretty well for them last year. I mean, as far as getting, I think a big part of the hurdle from last year was getting developers on board, you know, to make sure that they were focusing their app design. And I think that that actually worked really well, more so than getting people ready for 5.0 with getting apps. I mean, you know, we're looking at 5 months later, we've got a ton of material design apps in the Google Play Store. And I thumb through one of my Lollipop phones. I actually sometimes struggle to find a phone that's not, or find an app that's not got either, you know, a straight up Material makeover or something that plays nice with Material.
No, I can think of one. I'll be the first to say it.
But yeah, I mean, so it's not, you know, I think it's pretty good. I don't know, you know, unless there's more UI changes this year, I'm not sure there's as much benefit to a forward-thinking program as there was last year. But I think it was a good thing all the way around.
I think last year it was important to get it done because of the UI changes.
Yeah.
But it was also pretty important from, what was there, 5,100 new APIs?
Yeah.
If we see an update this year that doesn't bring a lot of UI, you know, changes to the interface, I think we still need a developer preview, maybe not as early, once the APIs are a little more rounded out and in a usable state. That's where developers can really benefit. Go on, read Shen's comment up at the very top.
Hang on. Ryan asked, with the GS6 arguably having the best camera on an Android phone, how exciting is it for LG to be going that route too? Seems like going forward, all Android phones will be primarily judged on their cameras. So LG, as it tends to do, is not leaking out its phone, but it's announcing its phone in bits and pieces. And I saw some headlines that what was it? LG was trying to, you know, beat out something, or, you know, whatever. They are, this is how they do hype, right? They want you talking about the phone a long time before they unveil it. It's not new. They've been doing this for years now. So what do we have now? We have more info on the display.
5.5-inch quad HD.
Yeah, and they were talking a lot about the colors, so, okay.
Higher color gamut.
Yay! Nothing gets me excited like something. Color.
Hey, now that's important. Let's not pitch posh it. It just doesn't mean a lot to the end user.
Doesn't mean a lot. Yeah. Camera f/1.6. Tell me again what that means.
1.8.
Or 1.8. I'm sorry.
That is the size of the aperture and controls how much light will reach the sensor. Lower is better. Once you reach a certain point, there's diminishing returns. It's not magic.
Lower number is a higher aperture.
Right. And there's been talk, and we talked about this with, I think, the HTC Desire I, maybe, because the aperture was so wide, but the sensor itself is so small. So, and Jerry, is that what you mean by diminishing returns?
Yes.
Okay.
Once you reach a certain point, I'm not going to say there's no difference between f/1.8 and f/2.0. I'm sure there is. But it's not like it's going to be earth-shattering when you look at the pictures you've taken.
So I hesitate to be like, yes, LG has a 1.8 aperture and Samsung has 1.9. LG is better. We can't say
that. Right. I think that people are jumping on that with this announcement, and it's all about what you do with that aperture. I mean, having the wider aperture means you don't necessarily have to have your ISO as high, and you don't have to have as long of a shutter time. So you can potentially bring in more light without having to crank up the ISO, shutter, and EV. But if the software doesn't know how to handle that and still cranks up the ISO anyway, you're still going to get a bunch of grain, and you're going to get too bright of pictures at night, which Jerry and I looked at the particulars when I did the iPhone 6 versus Galaxy S6 camera comparison, and we were looking at the numbers, and you know, Samsung still went overboard a couple times late at night where, yeah, it's at f/1.9 and it's super bright, but then it still cranked up the brightness in the software and way overdid things. So LG has to have the complete package. You know, just having f/1.8 doesn't instantly make your camera better than somebody with 2.2.
All that said, I'm pretty excited for it.
Sure. They're last two phones.
Good cameras.
Right. So I doubt it's going to get worse. Knock on wood. So I mean, I can't wait to see it.
The G2 had one of the best cameras of any phone released around it, and I was still extremely happy with that.
Yep. I thought enough of it to take it on a little mini vacation as my only camera and was pleased.
So there's that.
But now, we also, it is better. 1.8 is technically better than 1.9, but don't confuse the word better with amazing results that you're going to notice.
Right.
Ryan's also asking about the M9 Plus that was announced for China. You know, it's
an old phone.
What is the reason that HTC doesn't build a small amount of them with U.S. or European bands and sell them unlocked? I've talked to quite a few people that would have loved to bought that phone right here in the United States and were ready to send cash money to HTC to get it.
I honestly don't know.
The interesting thing being that HTC is usually pretty friendly about selling unlocked phones.
And I just feel bad having to tell them, well, you're buying a phone made for the Chinese market. It's probably not going to work very well with whatever carrier you use.
Yeah, so good luck getting good edge.
Don't do it. And I don't have a reason when they ask me why.
Even with all the discussions I've had with HTC, like, this phone didn't come up at all, really. So I am completely in the dark, other than it's a bigger phone meant for a region that is not mine and that I don't really understand anyway.
China's a pretty big addressable market if they just want to
go there.
So I get Jerry's point. You know, why don't they make 20,000 of them, sell them in the U.S.?
I don't know. Sorry. I wish I had a better answer, but I do
Samsung
not.
Samsung won't even sell you a Galaxy S6 unlocked, and they make a U.S. version of it. So
yeah, whatever. That to me is the really weird one. I'm looking through the Q&A. Anything else? Danny wants to know about this Dell Venue 10 7000. We'll see. I don't really want to talk about Dell until they get Lollipop anywhere near their...
They're just large Android tablets.
Yeah.
I handed Jerry the Dell tablet at the big Android meet and greet, and it was really funny. He held it for like 3 seconds, like he was going to drop it, like he was holding a child. And then... It's got afraid and handed it back to me.
It's so different. Yeah. I'm not sure if I like it or hate it, but it is so different than what I expected.
I went back and forth, and I think for me the big differentiator was that speaker, because I just don't like having one side stereo coming at me. It was really odd. But, I mean, how thin is that thing?
Wow.
Yeah. But they got to do something about the software. They got to get that updated. Soon. Seriously, Dell, come on.
I check almost every day. I hit the software update button, and it disappoints me.
There needs to be an app written that every time Russell hits the update button, it's not there. The Price is Right, lose horn.
Please. Brian asks, I would have purchased a Galaxy S6 today if it had Samsung Pay available. Is anyone else concerned about buying a phone with a feature that will not be available for a few months after it is released? Very afraid that it will be a case of overpromising. Wouldn't be the first time.
Right now, I'm not too upset about the idea of Samsung Pay not being on there, simply because they're not really using it as like a tentpole feature of the S6. They kind of backed away from that after they talked about it at MWC. And, you know, it would be a little different for me if they were like on the box, giant Samsung Pay logo, and they're like, yeah, you're going to be able to change the way you pay for everything. Oh, you know, coming summer 2015.
But we have to remember, I think it was Brian who just asked the question. To him, this sounds like this was a very important feature.
It sounds like it. I just don't think that Samsung is pushing it as hard as they talked about it, kind of, and then everything else, you know, is of more importance.
And it's also worth pointing out that Samsung bought Loop Pay like 2 or 3 weeks before MWC. I mean, this all happened super fast. And they made that announcement knowing that it wasn't going to be ready anytime soon, because that kind of integration is just not something that happens in 3 weeks. But the Loop Pay network already existed. You know, it's not like this is technology that they have to go and reinvent. The Loop Pay stuff worked, and worked really well. It just only worked on weird iPhone cases because the loot pay guys are insane. But the, you know, so I have every faith that the technology itself is solid, and you know, it'll look like loot pay with Samsung's user interface on it.
Yep.
So it'll be turquoise.
Yeah. So much turquoise.
And you know, the S6 is still a good phone even without Samsung Pay on it.
It's a very good phone. I'm liking it a lot more than I thought I would. Is it wrong that I say I feel a little dirty when I say that? But
no, there's no reason that you have to feel bad about saying that the S6 is good, because it actually is.
You know what? I don't like TouchWiz on my phone. It is too much. I like things simple. Everybody has their own thoughts on that. But on a tablet, that's a different story. I thought the Tab S was an amazing little device with a great screen, and TouchWiz really complemented the 10-inch form factor. I want to see this new TouchWiz on a 10-inch tablet.
It is kind of interesting. I have the Tab S 10.5, and the differences in the software are really pretty large between the phone and the tablet. So waiting for that one to hit.
It really is weird how big the difference between a phone experience and a tablet experience can be. Like, I still can't totally explain it, you know?
Especially on a Samsung tablet, there's a lot going on in the extra screen real estate.
But it's weird. I like what's going on a Samsung tablet, but I don't like it when it's going on the little phone. I only need to do a few certain tasks on. But that's just me.
No, it's not just you. It's a lot of people, I think.
I think I'm going to stick a fork in it. That is a good Friday Woo! Discussion. I didn't even get mad. I'm happy.
Didn't even get mad. Let's see. What can we get Phil mad about really quick?
There's your podcast title. Phil didn't even get mad.
Phil didn't even get mad. Look, version numbers are just version numbers. It's what's inside that matters. I should have done it this way. There, everybody get your screenshots. All right, well, we will do this again next week, I believe. We got some interesting stuff coming up. A Huawei event next week in London. We'll be there. I think that's all next week. So we will actually have new stuff next week to talk about. That's going to be fun. As we are every week, we're brought to you by shopandroid.com. They're getting a bunch of GS6 stuff in already, by the way, as well as some M9 stuff and some pre-orders. So go check that out. Shopandroid.com. Buy all the things.
Buy one extra.
And buy one
new pair of shoes.
Buy one for your friend, for your mom.
All right, Jerry, Russell, Andrew, thank you guys. Everybody listening live, thank you guys. Eric has one more good question in the Q&A. What do you guys do for family multimedia accounts for things like Google Play? Do you just use yours and stream it? Do you leave one device laying around where they can get to?
My kids are grown up, so I look at them and say, buy your own, you lazy little beep, beep.
Honestly, I've got
my data. This is my own stuff.
I've got the Nexus player hooked up to the TV, so they can just grab that and use that, and that's it.
Hey, Crossy Road.
Yep. I have the ADT1 hooked up, and then my son's tablet has my account hooked up to it. My daughter's iPods have the Disney app with my account logged in, so it grabs all the stuff from my Disney account. But other than that, it's their own stuff. They've bought their own music and listen to their own stuff.
I'm giving my kid the occasional Google Play gift card, too, so she can buy some music.
You know, Google needs to do something like Sony did, where you can have more than one user on a machine and share applications that you bought only on a certain device. I don't know how you do that, but there's got to be a way that Phil's kid can have a tablet and watch the Frozen movie without having to buy it two times or use Phil's account.
It works really well on platforms that aren't Android.
Just don't deactivate
family sharing.
Just don't deactivate more than 4 in a year, boys and girls. All right, that's it. We will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Adios.
This episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Ex Machina, starring Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson, and Alicia Vikander. It opens in select theaters in New York and Los Angeles on April 10th. That's this weekend, so go see it.